They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
A service of Fairfax Public Access and Cox Communications.
94.5 Cable FM.
Cox Cable Channel 37.
Comcast Cable Channel 24.27.
And broadcasted to the world in real audio at FCAC.org.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and after many, many, many tries and all kinds of problems, we finally managed to get today's guest, Alex Lee. Alex, thank you so very much. This has been, we've been trying for about 10 days to get this program recorded. And we finally made it.
Well, good. It's good to be here.
Thank you very much. Alex, you are president, CEO, founder of, laundrylists.org or the Project Laundry List? Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
We've been around for 10 years, actually 12 years. And we try and get people to hang out their clothes to save energy, very simply. We believe that things lead to bigger things, and that people feel overwhelmed by climate change unless they feel like they can do something. And therefore, it's a good idea for us to save the 6 to 10% of residential energy use that goes towards the electric dryer.
You had, when I first met you some years ago, on your website, you had some phenomenal number, percentage of all the electrical usage in this country being devoured by dryers, didn't you?
6 to 10% of residential electricity use goes towards the dryer. 5.8% is the percentage given by the federal government's Energy Information Administration, but in fact, that doesn't take into account the 17 million American households or 16% of American households that have clothes dryers that use gas, and it doesn't take into account prisons and jails and hospitals and restaurants and laundromats and other commercial establishments that do laundry.
And, of course, we have some almost 300,000 mandatory membership associations across the country with some 60 million members who, for the most part, are not allowed to use clotheslines. And so they are relying on, they're using more dryers than they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem.
It's a huge problem.
It's a huge problem.
There are 300,000 community associations.
Yes.
60 million people live in these various places, right?
Yes.
And most of them are banned or restricted clothesline.
Right.
And so we're bringing right-to-dry legislation to various state legislatures across the country in hopes of rectifying this problem.
Wait a minute. Tell me a little bit about this right-to-dry legislation.
Well, the bill, as introduced in New Hampshire, would basically excise or cut out all of the existing restrictions and rules prohibiting the use of clotheslines or restricting the use of clotheslines.
So you're doing, I'm sorry, go on.
From municipal ordinances and from private contracts and bylaws that regulate community associations.
And you've just started this in New Hampshire? It's the first state?
No, we've seen this introduced three times in Vermont already, and a resolution passed amongst the Bar Association in California, and there are legislators in Connecticut and in North Carolina considering introducing such legislation.
Wow, that's impressive.
I
mean, tell us a little bit about your organization. Now, you've always been passionate about this because the first time I met you was when I ran across a law review article that you'd written about clotheslines and associations. And I called you and you came on and we talked about that. And so now, but even though you went to law school, you've never really practiced law. This is what you do, right?
Yeah, this is what I do. I've done various things. I live in Concord, New Hampshire, so politics is all around me. And I've
I live in Washington, D.C., or right outside.
corruption is all around you.
Very good, Alex.
we have, you know, been pretty much just a website for 10 or 12 years, and then it happened that we got into the New York Times last April, and a great reporter wrote an article that became the most emailed article.
Well, you've been getting a lot of publicity in the mainstream media also.
A ton. We were on the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
Yeah.
And so has that increased the number? I know I've been giving out your website to just about everyone that I run across. And, in fact, I had, I just got off. I was working for a friend of mine who ran for public office. And, you know, a number of the people who came on and volunteered to work with us, you know, they were very environmentally concerned. And I gave them your website. So I don't know how many of them signed up for your newsletter, but I know a lot of them were going over there and checking it out.
Well, that's great. Our website is laundrylist.org, and we do have a quarterly newsletter that we get out called Hanging Out. And we email people periodically. Recently, it's been as much as once a week, we have you know, a few thousand people signed up on our list at this point.
You know, dryers are not the only things that people who live in associations are not allowed to do that does affect the environment.
That's right.
I am thinking in terms of solar panels that would reduce the use of, you know, that would generate its own energy. In the Southwest, a lot of associations will not allow people to use roller blinds, which cuts down on the sun and the heat coming in. So they have to use their air conditioners more.
Yeah.
Wind, you know, what other energy alternatives are there out there? I mean, associations are supposed to be helping and doing a great job protecting people, but it's not working out that way, is it, Alex?
Well, there's a great article that a guy who I talked to last week named Stan Cox wrote, it's called The Property Cops, And unfortunately, community associations sometimes don't function the way that we might hope. I mean, what I think we all hope is that they will function as small democracies, and that they will periodically revisit their rules and laws and that sort of thing. But that's just not happening. And so what you get is stale bylaws that people signed on to 30, 40 years ago when they moved into the community, or even 10 years ago. There's no way to really change those without going to a majority vote. And nobody likes to rock the boat in their community.
But the thing is, you don't have to enforce them. You can't take away a right. For instance, you can't mandate something that's not already there, but you don't have to enforce everything that's on the list, do you? In the covenants, just because it says no clotheslines, does it mean you have to enforce it?
It's a contractual agreement, so that if one of the neighbors who is part of this contractual agreement feels that it ought to be enforced, then really they do have a right to seek its enforcement.
But they can enforce it themselves.
The community association usually through the agreement needs to enforce it.
Usually through, but every set of covenants, every declaration I've seen gives each individual member, as well as the association, the right to enforce the provisions of the covenants.
That's right.
So if you don't like it, if you've got one person who doesn't like it, why should everybody else have to pay to litigate that or to enforce it when it only affects one person, right?
I think it's a great question. I'm not really prepared to give an answer. I think that the real solution is not to have a bunch of rules on the books that aren't being enforced, but rather to eliminate the rules that are creating problems for people, or to be more thoughtful about them. I mean, the problem that we have is that most of these clothesline covenants are totally overbroad. They'll say things like, you can't hang your clothes in the backyard, or anywhere but the backyard. What if you don't have a backyard? Or, they'll say clotheslines cannot appear on the outside of the building or something like that. That may not make sense for everybody in the unit.
So you're talking about a multi-unit type of thing.
It varies. I mean, these covenants are so ubiquitous that they affect people in multi-family housing units, and they also affect people in single homes.
That's true. How did you get interested in this topic?
Basically, a combination of things. My mother always hung out when I was growing up, and then I organized a peace symposium as an undergraduate, and Dr. Helen Caldicott, who's on our advisory board, gave a speech, and she said if we all did things like hang out our clothes, we could shut down the nuclear industry. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting idea. And we proceeded to start a subgroup of the environmental group on campus at Middlebury College, and people got involved and excited. And then I went to the Green Corps environmental organizing semester, and while I was there, I put together a strategic plan for the organization. And when I got back to Vermont, started working with Senator Dick McCormick, who's on our board, and his brother had been introducing the Right to Dry bill periodically. Well, they introduced it before we were even around in 1992, and then again in 1998, and again last session, and it got combined with the energy efficiency bill. And one of our laundry heroes is the governor of Vermont, and unfortunately he he vetoed the energy efficiency bill, and therefore he vetoed the right to drive provision.
Oh, so you got really close to getting it passed.
Yeah. He's a laundry hero of ours because he hangs out his laundry.
But not because he vetoes bills.
Yeah.
That must be a little confusing there, Alex. He vetoes your bill, but he's your hero.
We are a little perplexed by this situation.
Any explanation as to why he did that?
Well, it was part of a larger bill, yes. Absolutely. It was part of an energy efficiency bill, and he didn't want to give as much money as...
Oh, so that's what the problem was?
Yeah. The premier of Ontario is faced with a decision by Peter Love, who's the chief energy conservation officer for the province, of lifting the ban on clotheslines. And I'm hoping that he's going to do the right thing. Set a precedent for North America.
Ontario, Canada.
Ontario, Canada.
We're talking to Alexander Lee. Alex is the founder, CEO, executive director of Project Laundry.
Project Laundry List.
Project Laundry List, and the website is laundrylist.org. It's full of information. I would recommend that you check it out and learn how you can help and maybe get something going in your own states, wherever you happen to be, whether or not you agree with it. Alex, there's been about four decades now of telling people that laundry hanging outside is going to reduce property values. How do you overcome that stereotypical thinking?
I don't know if it's stereotypical. It's an outgrowth of two different beliefs, which is that people hang out their clothes because they're poor, and I'm not poor, and therefore I don't want to do it. And so it's a class-based thing. And then I think it's an outgrowth of aesthetics, aesthetic values that we don't really have, but that we pretend to have because it's a convenient excuse for not hanging out our clothes. And what I'm talking about is the sort of prudish idea that I don't want to see her boxers or his boxers and her bloomers on the line. People say that kind of thing to me all the time. Oh, I don't want to see, her, and I don't want to put out my. But there are all sorts of ways to screen that from public view. Hide it behind the sheets, or hang the dainties indoors on a drying rack. I mean, there are a million solutions, and that we've somehow developed over the last 30, 40 years defining taste, and we can no longer stand the sight of undergarments is sort of a crazy idea.
Alex, your focus is on laundry and clotheslines and dryers, but I that seems to be the main focus of what you do. But are you concerned about all of the other prohibitions that force people to use electricity? For instance, there are the bans against solar panels, bans that associations typically have against having some kind of awning that would serve.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Are you doing anything about that?
Yes. We're starting to work with the Community Association Institute.
Oh, you are?
To come up with a laundry list of suggestions and ideas that can go out to various communities and for them to consider.
Who are you working with, and what has the reception been like?
The reception's been really excellent, and we're working with their government affairs people and We're working, trying to bring together a broader coalition of folks that'll include some national environmental organizations and some sustainable gardening experts. And it's my impression that Community Association Institute is going to move forward in a very positive and strong, convincing way to address some of these issues.
I'm shocked. I mean, I'm actually surprised that you're saying that.
It's been some of the most rewarding and important work that we've been involved with, I think. I mean, the proof will be in the pudding. They're definitely a very powerful lobby. We'll see what we can make happen. They don't believe that, you know, the right to dry bill is the right approach, and that
doesn't surprise me.
They believe that, you know, everything needs to be voluntary, and that's not necessarily our organizational approach, but it doesn't keep us from working together to try and pluck some of the low-lying fruit here. These predominantly wealthy, but not always, community associations can really set the tone and exercise some leadership.
Usually they like to enforce these rules. But again, I mean, you're going back to the belief that, gee whiz, you know, we've got laundry clotheslines here, and that's a sign of poverty, and it's ugly, and it's going to offend our aesthetic sensibilities. And that's pretty much the way associations think, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, good luck with that. I'll be very interested to see just how far that goes. You know, I don't want to cast a negative pall on the whole thing, but if you can get CAI involved in doing something like that.
We have 26 state chapters, and I think, you know, the times, they are changing. People are really beginning to recognize the importance of climate change, and or that we do something about climate change. And this is one way to do it. I mean, I ultimately, you know, am optimistic enough about human nature to think that we all want the same thing. That there's some competing values here that have to do with, you know, aesthetics versus what I consider to be an overwhelming public policy concern that would allow us to excise things from contracts, which is climate change. We'll see what we can make happen.
Well, like I said, good luck with that. I don't mean to sound so negative. It's just I've been doing this for a while, and that's really surprising. But, you know, as you said, times, they are changing. Maybe. Who knows?
We'll have to wait and see.
When I talked to you yesterday, just for the view, for our listeners, Alex was scheduled, we were going to do this last week, and we had some major phone problems with the building. So I called Alex yesterday, and I said, the phones are fixed. Can we try to get this, you know, record this show today? And, Alex, you were very gracious, and you said, sure. And, came in this morning or came in this afternoon, and everything was all wonky. So you've been very patient, and while we worked out all the technical glitches, and everybody who knows me knows that I'm the least technical person in the world. So, you know, it's good to have this, but I'm really excited about sharing and talking about what you're doing. And when I talked to you yesterday and called you, you said you had a PowerPoint presentation that you normally...
Yeah, it's called Laundry, an Inconvenient Chore, you know, we've been giving it various things. I gave it at the big conference that we had in late November, and I'll give it to student groups and whatnot. But, yeah, it basically lays out the problem. A number of solutions. I mean, we have a lot of creative ideas for how we can get people to change their laundry habits in this country. And one of them is just getting weathermen and meteorologists to announce that it's a good day to drive.
Oh, wow. And how, I mean, what would make the conditions ideal for drying?
Well, there are about five different weather factors that get taken into consideration by Stendicheria.com, which is an Italian website that basically scrapes some data from weather.com and figures out whether it's going to be a good day in Venice or Milano or whatnot for you to dry out your clothes. And the service is available in New York, and we're hoping that it'll be sort of available everywhere at some point. And those factors are things like
rain.
obviously, the barometric pressure and how much sun is shining and the humidity and those kind of things.
So. Well, that's interesting. I'd never thought of that. What else are you doing?
I met yesterday with some folks from a utility company where, you know, cold water washing is another thing that can have a tremendous environmental impact. So we're trying to find ways to encourage that at laundromats and there are two major associations. There's the Laundromat Association, which is called the Coin Laundry Operators, or Coin Laundry Association. That's one group, but the other group that is more relevant to the people who are probably listening to this show is the Multifamily Housing Laundry Association. The stock of dryers and washing machines in condominiums and apartment buildings and places where people share machines is certainly not as efficient and good as the stock as it is in coin laundry operated laundromats, that's because the people who are running a laundromat are in business to make money, a landlord who has a couple machines in his building may not see that as a major source of revenue and may not install the most efficient machine, or the condo association may not want to upgrade in a timely fashion.
By efficient, you mean energy efficient?
I mean energy efficient, and I mean water efficient, both. Yeah.
What's a water efficient machine? Can you tell me what the difference is? What uses less water? Is that it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the new washing machines that are high efficiency use significantly less water. Some folks from Drops, DROPPS.com were in touch with me yesterday. They're producing a detergent that dissolves in water, and they made some pretty remarkable claims, about why their product, makes more sense, than some of the even some of the environmental detergents that are on the market that have liquid in them. You might be interested in some of their claims.
For instance?
I'm looking here.
Okay.
Hold on 2 seconds. They figured that for the 25 billion wash loads that get done every year, if people were using Drops instead of the usual cup and jug, we'd save 6.2 million gallons of diesel gas in transportation, 267 million pounds of plastic, and 622,000 tons of greenhouse gas emissions in transport. And that's because a traditional jug of liquid laundry detergent's only a small percentage of detergent and it's diluted by a large amount of water.
Wow, I never thought of that.
So this is pretty interesting concept. And so these are the kinds of things that we're trying to bring to people's attention.
What else? That is interesting.
Well, let's see what else. We're going to do a million solar dryers campaign as a competition for National Hanging Out Day.
Wait, say that again. Million solar dryers.
You may have heard of the Million Solar Roof.
No, I haven't. Tell us about it.
That's a federal program to try and get solar panels on a million roofs.
But how is that going to? How does that square with the bans, the prohibitions against them? There's a guy in Arizona who went to court, a guy by the name of Sparks, because he used solar heating to heat his pool, and the association decided they didn't like the panels; they were unsightly, even though nobody could see them. But.
Mm-hmm.
So is this going to preempt associations' bans against solar panels?
No. It's a program. It's a federal government program. But we're basically just borrowing the name by making a play on words here with a million solar dryers, which is what people call clotheslines. 30 years ago, some guy did this mail order thing where he said he'd send you a solar dryer if you sent him $50, and he'd send you a bag of clothespins and a clothesline. We're going to do this program. We're going to try and get communities to compete with each other and see who can get up the most clotheslines and that kind of thing.
That's interesting. Is that going to be, nationally? Or I guess presumably you'll start out small and start out in your own neighborhood and try to expand it statewide, yeah?
Yeah, we've got a very progressive city named Keene here in New Hampshire that's going to challenge a very well-to-do suburb of our largest city. They're both about the same size, and we're hoping that... they'll push each other to get the most clotheslines and racks.
Since it is winter and it's pretty cold out here, you're probably even colder up in New Hampshire. How does clothes drying in the winter work? I mean, it would seem to me that with the temperatures at around freezing that your clothes would be frozen.
Sublimation, that high school chemistry stuff about a solid going through going through a gas without going through the liquid phase means that people were able to wear dry clothes 100 years ago. So you can hang out your clothes. It's not a lot of fun. What we recommend, particularly for people with wood stoves and dry heat, is that they find a drying rack or some space inside where they can dry clothes. And then they can humidify their house with their clothes instead of paying to run a humidifier.
Kill two birds with one stone.
Exactly.
That would be great for small stuff, but you've got sometimes big things like bed sheets and tablecloths, and I don't know if people still use tablecloths, but these are all things that probably are going to be a little bigger and not so easy to do inside.
People use sheets and tablecloths 50 years ago, and no one had a dryer, or very few people had a dryer until, after about 1932 or 3. That's when they started getting them, really after World War II. Part of what we're talking about is a design solution. What we've increasingly done is built communities so that there's no room for people to hang out their clothes. So communities like London, Ontario, and Vancouver, British Columbia, are considering regulations that would require any new building to take into consideration where drying will take place.
So you're starting right from the design concept, the planning phase.
Yes, exactly. I'll be speaking at a building green energy conference, and we're participating in a couple of green expos trying in many different ways to get the word out to architects and builders and developers that this is really a design problem. I went and spoke at a community in Concord, New Hampshire, that's a retirement community they loved my inconvenient chore talk, but they voted 6-0 to keep their rules the same.
Oh, really?
And it's because they couldn't imagine where the clotheslines would go if they didn't go in the front yards of the people who wanted to use them, and they didn't want them in the front yard because they thought that would be an eyesore. They never... what we need to do in these communities is make sure that people are working together, because, in fact, the two or three old elderly folks who live in this retirement community would probably have been willing to walk to a different location to dry their clothes because they feel like it's the right thing to do and they want the exercise. And, I mean, there are a lot of ancillary benefits to making this move back to clotheslines. One of them is, you know, you get outside, perhaps, unless you're drying inside, but you certainly get some exercise. It's minimal exercise, but we're getting increasingly obese because we have a lack of just basic regular activity in our lives. Your clothes smell better and they last longer. Clothes wear out very quickly if you put them through the dryer. You hang them out on the clothesline, you'll have them for years. I always ask, where do you think lint comes from?
Yeah, that's true. Alex, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Usually one of the things that a dryer will do is it'll fluff up the clothes, so you don't really need to iron. You know, 50 years ago, you're talking about going back to the days before, before dryers, people used dryers. People ironed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't irons use up electricity? And would we lose? I mean, what happens to the benefits of not using dryers on the electrical savings versus having to use an iron? Because you don't really want to look like you slept in your clothes all the time. Is there?
People can shake their clothes hard and give. Called snapping before they hang them on the line, and that'll get rid of a lot of the wrinkling. If you're not right there by the dryer when the dryer cycle finishes, your clothes will be pretty wrinkly, and you'll need to iron them too. So, I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just wondering if this is an issue, because with the hanger, when you hang the clothes, you kind of have to fold them over. So with a dryer, you don't end up with a line going down the middle or, across the top where, your shoulders are kind of bent over, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that a concern that people might decide they don't really want to have these little bumps on their shoulders and might have to dig out the iron?
When I was the featured activist in Sierra magazine, I got a couple of email messages from people informing me that I had hung the clothes in the background in the wrong way, and it was a posed photo. In fact, we had. One ought not to hang the clothes by the shoulders. You should hang them from the tails, according to Cindy Etter Turnbull, who wrote a whole book called Fine Lines that's full of the craft of hanging clothes. I think there are solutions, and what we find is that people hunt for every reason possible not to do this. And we have increasingly high standards about not having bumps on our shoulders or brown marks from wooden clothespins or whatnot.
I hadn't thought of the brown marks.
That's one complaint that we get, and therefore we're working with somebody to produce the first one-piece recycled, recyclable, non-breaking, non-staining plastic clothespin.
They used to have plastic clothespins.
They still do. Yeah.
They still do.
Most of the clothespins on the market are plastic, and all of the wooden clothespins are now manufactured abroad, either in Germany or China. The last wooden clothespin manufacturer closed its doors in Montpelier this year.
Wow. So what else have you got in your presentation that you can share with us?
Well, it's full of a lot of statistics, about energy. One of the amazing things is that 15,600 fires are started every year by dryers, and failure to clean is the leading cause of those dryer fires.
Wow. How many again?
That's 15,600, so it's about $99 million of property value, average of between $1,000 and $2,000 property damage per house.
Wow.
As a result of these fires. So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
It's the most dangerous appliance in the household by far, because it's a heating element, people don't clean them and take care of them. Cleaning out that vent is really important, but also cleaning the vent between the dryer and the outside is critical, because things can get caught in there and start a fire as well.
So. That's true. We're talking to Alexander Lee. Alex is the, what are you, the executive director? You're the founder, you're the president.
I'm the founder and executive director of Project Laundry List, been around since 1995. We've been educating people about the connection between laundry practices and energy consumption. And so one of the ways that we do that is to try and get people to be aware that nuclear power plants will need to be built and hydroelectric dams will need to be built if we continue to demand the kind of electricity that we demand now. And so we hung out a 400-foot clothesline across from Hydro-Quebec headquarters in Montreal in September. We had a big conference on a nuclear and carbon-free future here in Concord, New Hampshire, invited all the presidential candidates. So those are some of the things that we're working on.
That's impressive. 400-foot.
It was beautiful. You can see pictures of it on our website.
Give us your website again.
It's laundrylist.org.
400-foot clothesline. Did you have clothes on there?
We did. They were all used T-shirts that had been painted with a message for Hydro-Quebec. Hydro-Quebec is planning to dam rivers in northern Quebec to provide electricity to the northeast. It was a big cause celeb in the early 90s. In fact, in 1990, the Cree Indians who live in this area paddled a boat all the way down from the St. Lawrence to down the Hudson River to New York City and arrived on Earth Day to call attention to the rivers that were going to be destroyed in their traditional hunting and burial grounds.
Wow. Are dryers the single biggest users of electricity, residential electricity, or, is that?
They're the single biggest user of what I would call optional electricity. 83% of Americans, according to the Pew Research, see the dryer as an essential product or a necessity as opposed to a luxury item, which has changed drastically over the last 20 or so years. The dryer is not the biggest user of electricity. Certainly for people who have electric heat, that would be the biggest user.
That would be expensive, too.
It's very expensive. In Quebec, it's very predominant because Hydro-Quebec is such a force there. Electric heat is a big suck, but then the refrigerator is a huge user of electricity.
But you're not going to ask us to give up the refrigerators.
That's right. No one has started a project to eliminate the refrigerator yet, but it is probably possible that we could reduce the size of our refrigerators and eat more dry and prepared foods.
We'd probably be healthier for it if we did that.
We'll you know, there are people who are concerned about this kind of thing, but no one's there's no project refrigerator yet.
There's no project refrigerator. All right. Well, maybe one of my listeners will start one.
There is a group called Pump 'Em Up, which was started by a young person as well.
What's Pump 'Em Up?
They're trying to get everyone to just inflate their car tires. The idea is that if we all inflated our car tires, we could save millions of gallons of gasoline every year.
That just inflating the car tires?
Properly inflating them, so that if your tires are down, you're not getting the same kind of mileage and efficiency as you would if they were properly inflated.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. I mean, yeah. It's the little things basically that add up is what you're telling me.
Yeah, well, I think that that's true. And there's been, you know, lots of objections to the sort of 50 simple things you can do idea of environmentalism. And we've sort of gotten away from that. And there are people, Mike Tidwell among them, who argue that all we need to do is stop screwing in our CFL light bulbs and call Congress and get them to do something. But I think we're finding that that doesn't necessarily work. And furthermore, it's not an either-or situation. You know, you can screw in your light bulb and then go call Congress.
Or maybe you can call Congress and have them screw in your light bulb for you. Or maybe they'll screw something else for you.
How many congressmen does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Well, I was thinking of something.
One of the things in the energy bill, actually, is that the incandescent light bulb will be phased out over the next 4 years. We'll be transitioning to CFLs. But I call that planned luminescence, because we're going to be switching out incandescent light bulbs and putting in CFLs, which is a very good thing. CFLs have mercury in them, and therefore there are better technologies coming down the pike, and so pretty soon we're going to be swapping out all the CFLs to put in LEDs, which is a different kind of light bulb that doesn't have mercury in it and is coming along technologically so that it'll be ready for market at a reasonable price within the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I'd heard about the mercury, and so we have problems getting rid of them, and, you know.
That's true. I've got one sitting on the car seat right now that burned out. On the other hand, they last a lot longer.
Yeah.
A lot longer. And somebody did a study that showed that twice as much mercury would be released if you had an incandescent bulb than if we were to break all of the CFLs and have little toxic disasters in our households. And so where does that mercury come from? From the burning of coal. The incandescent light bulbs, because they're so much less efficient, require that much more coal consumption, and that much more mercury is put into the air, twice as much mercury is put into the air by running an incandescent light bulb as opposed to a CFL.
Wow, you're full of information. So what other energy wasters, I'm going to say, and energy guzzlers do we typically have that associations contribute to their usage, like, you know, banning clotheslines, like banning awnings and yeah, roller blinds and solar panels and, you know, probably windmills that would help generate some wind energy.
Yeah, well, I referenced earlier an article by Stan Cox called The Property Cops. While it's not comprehensive, he has a very good list in his article of some of the things that communities are banning and restricting. One of those things is, well, you mentioned exterior solar collection units. That one gets a fair amount of ink spilled. But also compost piles. are sometimes prohibited.
Would you believe organic gardening is prohibited? I know someone who was hounded and actually lost her house to pay legal fees because her association wouldn't allow her to use organic gardening.
Yeah, no awnings. Vegetable gardens must not exceed 64 square feet. That kind of thing. It's sort of endless.
So if you had, we're getting close to the end of the show here, but if you had some advice to give, let's say advice to give the Community Associations Institute in dealing with some of the issues here, what would it be? What would you like to see associations back down on? And how do you think
I think what community associations need to do is commit to reviewing their rules and bylaws on a periodic basis instead of, getting people to agree to them when they move there and then never looking at them again. Because values and mores or morals change over time. 20 years ago, the aesthetics of an ugly clothesline may have been a more important factor than climate change to many people. It shouldn't have been thus, but it was. Now, I think that dynamic has changed, and people understand that we really need to do something. And this is a really simple thing that we could do. And we haven't really talked at all about how in Europe and Asia, the clothesline is still pretty ubiquitous. People go to Venice to photograph the clotheslines there. It's part of the landscape, and they're beautiful. There's dozens of artists, some of whom post their artwork on our website, who paint and do sculpture and take photographs of laundry. And it's because it's organic and colorful and nostalgic to some extent. And we ought to encourage it to be a flag of the eco chic rather than a flag of poverty.
And my sister lives in Switzerland, and whenever I go to visit her, she has the drying racks on her balcony. She lives, she's moved now, but she lived in a multi-unit high-rise type of thing. On the upper floor, and she had to hang her clothes on these drying racks. And you drive around Geneva and the surrounding areas, and you see a lot of clotheslines. But she also spent a lot of time ironing as well. She didn't use the dryer. She had one. She didn't use it because she said it was just, used up way too much electricity.
It
was expensive.
Running her iron was expensive?
Her dryer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, but she ended up shirts and, things that she had to wear to work, blouses. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all had to be ironed.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that grew out of our conversation with we really are not responsible for this, but Eileen Fisher last year handed out clothespins on Earth Day to all the customers who bought something. And as a result, there was a conversation in-house about launching a new line of clothing that was washable instead of dry cleaning. So they did that this year. So
that would be good.
That's one of the things, too, is dry cleaning is one of the most toxic processes out there. And so one of the things that we're working on.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your patience, because it's been interesting, hasn't it, getting to this point?
That's all right. We're only an hour behind schedule.
I think we're about 10 days behind schedule here, Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had problems today, too. Good luck with getting all of your laws passed. And good luck with it. And again, let's give out the website. It's laundrylist.org.
Yep. Yep, and we have a blog as well called The Clothes Peg, which is just blog.laundrylist.org.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Give that to me again. I'll put it in my thing, blog.
.laundrylist.org.
.laundrylist.org. Sounds good.
Thanks very much. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Holiday.
Same to you. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for joining us today. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. We'll see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.